Yes. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic. As far as housekeeping goes, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. I'm going to throw some links out here into the chat. You can sign up for a low volume mailing list for events at our home group. At our website, simpleactions.net. I also put our PayPal and Venmo links in there. We'll talk about that more when the seventh tradition happens. And everyone has the ability to unmute if they would like to. We can open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Alrighty, and Christine has offered to read the preamble.
Well, good evening, family. My name is Christine, and I'm an alcoholic. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There were no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supported through our own contribution. AA is not alive with any sect, denomination, policies, organizations, or institutions. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help allow alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you for the good service.
Thank you, Christine. All right, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step four, part one, focusing on the resentments portion of the inventory. Please help me welcome our panel tonight. We have Karen W. and Al J. And I'm going to go ahead and read. We're not going to read you to death tonight, but I'll go ahead and offer the first reading in tonight's selection. And we usually, Karen, we usually do ladies' choice around here. So when I'm done reading, you can opt to share first or throw Al under the bus at your discretion. All right. So we're going to start tonight on page 63. Let me read step four first. Part one, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambition, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with? Karen?
Hi, thanks for having me here. I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic, sober through the grace of God and the fellowship of AA for 42 years. First thing I want to say about the fourth step, I'll just dive in and then Al can clean it up. Whatever I miss or miss too wrong. Misspeak. When I started, I did not do great inventories. I was trying to write an inventory via the big book. So where I've landed at today is the result of trying to do them over and over and over. And I'm not going over the same resentments. I'm going over new ones as they occur. Sometimes I feel like resentments are like lint and they just come to me, you know what I mean? So anyway, I might need to have the Karen backup one be host so I can share screen there. Do you see that? But anyway, so I actually had wound up at a place where I do really pretty simple writing, at least in my opinion. But I tried to really do the big book. And I had a sponsor somewhere along the way who told me later on, I mean, after I've been sober a while, she told me when I'm writing down the cause, and this is great advice in my opinion, when I'm writing down the cause of who I'm resentful at, keep it short, 10 words, 12 words. You know, I don't need a book of what they did and what you did and what they said and what, you know, the whole story. So let me see if I can share my screen. I hope I do this right. Sorry, guys. Okay, so here's like, I wrote down a real resentment that happened to me. Happened to me, like I had nothing to do with it. A real resentment I had. And this is how I wrote the first part. I wrote down, I'm resentful at that guy, name is unimportant. The cause, he sued us and he lied. And this was a two-year-long lawsuit that cost us tens of thousands of dollars. But you notice I didn't have to put all that in there and how he lied and all that stuff. And then I wrote down, and I don't usually write all the detail I have here. I wrote it to explain it for you guys. Financial security, money. I was worried about money. Emotional security, hurts my serenity due to my anger at the situation. Fear, we might lose. Fear, how will we pay for the lawyer? Relationship, strain on my marriage, because this thing was going on and on and on, this stupid lawsuit. Self-esteem, why can't I be more serene? Why am I such a spiritual loser? You know what I mean? I have all this sobriety. Why am I, you know, I'm so upset, because I was very upset for a couple of years. I mean, I stayed sober, but it's like I was walking around with a huge cloud over my head and it was always raining, you know? I just had to talk to people about it. It was terrible. Pride, what will people think about me for being so upset? You know what I mean? Because I really was like crazed. So that's how I do the first part of the chart there. And I don't have to go into any more detail than that. Nice, short, and sweet. The hard part, of course, is actually, and I really like to follow this format, and I ask myself these questions. What am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? How does, and I ask myself each thing and think, how might this affect this thing or that thing? And one other thing I want to say, we didn't read it, but the section in the big book about the taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding process. I think of the people in the grocery store who are walking around and they're just with a clipboard writing down what they have. Oh, we have 10 tubes of toothpaste. Oh, we're missing some baking soda here. Oh, we have three kinds of flour. They're just writing down what they have, or they're using a scan thing. The way a lot of us take inventory, which where we're screaming and yelling and crying and resisting, would be like the guy in the store pitching a fit because he doesn't have enough flour, or the flour has gone bad and has bugs in it. You know, if I can really just sort of try to separate from the situation, I'm just writing down what's going on, you know, the flaws, the problems. And the cool thing is I will get set free from this later. So Al, I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Al, alcoholic. Sobriety date, May 5th, 1987. That's because AA works. Good to see all of you this evening. And thank you, David. David likes inviting me because he knows I have a lot of experience with resentment. Refeeling the past. Oh, my gosh. And so there's so much here, and I'm just going to take a jab at some of this. First of all, the only time that the word disease is mentioned in the big book is right here on page 64. And if we don't put spiritual disease in front of it, it gives the wrong implication. Disease by itself lends to a medical solution. Spiritual disease leads to a spiritual solution. And the word disease, when it's broke down, it's dis, separate from ease. And so what we look at is not so much that resentment or the things that we see in the inventory, such as fear or our sex conduct, so much is wrong, but it separates us. And separation is the problem. So when I have a spiritual dis-ease, I am separate. And what I want to do is I want to get unblocked from this, but I'm never going to totally get unblocked because I'm a human being. And so when I look at this, and I'm a third column guy all the way, and every column that you write down is important, but I'm a third column guy, affects mine, what hurt, threatened, or interfered with. And we can see on page 65 that self-esteem is involved in every resentment because it affects how I see myself. And next to that, he put in brackets, parentheses, is fear. So the driver of the resentment is self-centered fear. It's the driver because it threatens something in me. And later on, Bill wrote in the 12 and 12, the instincts in collision, these instinctual drives that subtly blindly drive us. And the sex instinct, as we know, is a very powerful human instinct. It's God-given. It helps to build society. The social instinct, the need for self-importance, companionship, a sense of belonging, strong instinct, need that to develop and make society. Security instinct, which is money. We like it. It brings some security. Also, we have dependence on other people. There's security there. And when these things are hurt, threatened, or interfered with, they cause the resentment inside of me. And so I've become very aware of that in my life. How much this self-centered fear really drives me. And what we say in AA, what really gets most alcoholics in sobriety, and not only, but it is an area that most of us can agree we have suffered from time to time, and that's romance, that's finance, and that's self-importance. And almost all the resentments that I've had have all developed out of those areas in my life, the threats to them and the driving of the self-centered fear. And as we get into this, we're going to see the marvelous solutions that come out of this to dissolve this, to get us unblocked from these resentments and these fears. I'll pass.
Thank you, Al. We are off to a roaring start. We're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Karen?
I love this section. These two pages are like the key to freedom. You know, it's, this one is 67. And actually what I have, where I'm at now with taking inventories with each resentment, okay? For each resentment, I read these two pages and try to apply it to that resentment. I literally take, this is the most important part to me, reading these pages and then the writing that I do on page 67. Because a lot of times when I'm resentful and angry, I spend all my time, I'm right, they're wrong. How could this be happening to me? You know, that kind of thing. And I want out there to change, but there's no freedom there. The freedom comes in here, changes. When the spiritual thing happens, when God relieves me of this selfish self-centeredness, you know. And so I have to kind of like read this and get to the place where I like sort of sell myself on that, you know what, resentments are my enemy. I mean, even though I know they're my enemy, I still want to indulge in them, you know? So I take this and I read it and I think, you know, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. My first inventories in the program, I never did anything after that first chart. And this is where I was. They were wrong and I wasn't. That's what I concluded. And I didn't really get much freedom from it. I did do fifth steps on them and got a little relief there. But later when I started really doing this, I got a lot more relief. And when I say to myself, like the guy that sued us, I mean, he really was wrong. It was so wrong. He had to pay us all the expenses. His lawyer had to pay us. I mean, that never happens. But, you know, that doesn't help me any to know that. It helps me none, not at all. And sometimes when I, and actually I think this happens a lot, when I'm upset about something, I'll be mad at myself. Like, how could I do that? You know, rolling around over and over in that does not get me anywhere, does not set me free. It just becomes like obsessive and crazy for me. And the more I fought and tried to have my own way, the worse matters got. And even when I do win, like in that crazy lawsuit, there were moments when it went my way, you know, and I would be happy for 5 minutes. I'm winning. Yay. But then I'd be right back in the crazy. And when I say it's like I was walking around with a cloud over my head, it really was. It's like I had an umbrella and it was covered in a black sheet. And that's all I could see all the time was, and it was heavy. And I was carrying it, you know, I wouldn't put the stupid thing down, you know, and it really did shut me off from the sunlight, you know, from God, you know, and I was so obsessed. I couldn't, and not all the time, but a lot of the time, let's be real. I wasn't seeing new people. I wasn't thinking about them. I was just crazed with this resentment, this justified resentment, you know. So anyway, I have to get to this place where I say, and I literally read this to myself and say, okay, how is this deep resentment helping me? It's not at all. It's leading me into futility and unhappiness. It's stealing all my time. It's all I think about, et cetera, et cetera. And I am permitting this and I am squandering the hours. I really never get free until I take responsibility for the fact that I have this resentment and I'm indulging it. You know, I'm drinking that poison. And it's like, well, I'm justified to drink it. Well, you might be justified to drink it, but you'll still get sick. You know what I mean? I really think of resentments like poison that I am permitted to drink, but it might kill me, you know? And why would I want to do that? But anyway, so it's fatal if I do this. So I sort of, that's how I work this, these pages here. And I don't even remember how far we got here. Did we get to return back to the list yet in the reading? I'm sorry, I'm looking at my big book.
Next paragraph.
Oh, we did that one too? Okay, so this is, I actually have to pray for a lot of these. That's another hint.
We didn't do it yet. We're that'll be the next reading we turn back to the list. All right.
Then I'll just finish with the prayer thing. I pray, God, help me to see how futile this is. Help me to see how this is cutting me off. Because a lot of times I don't even have power or sanity or sense, you know, or spiritual vision enough to see this in myself. So I will ask God while I'm doing this, please, or whatever you call your higher power, please help me to see how this is cutting me off from you and cutting me off from my fellows. Help me to see how this is leading to futility and unhappiness, that even when I win, I'm losing. And that helps me to get a little saner about it. Al?
All righty. So at this top here, I stayed resentful. Don't fall out of your chair, but on and off for about 6 years plus. I was about 24 years to 30 years. My wife got drunk at 21 years of sobriety, had a kid in the house. My partners and I started disagreeing once we became successful in business, and we crashed and burned. And what I learned about resentment is once you get it, it's always right. That's just how resentment comes. And it comes automatically with a list for their defects. And so what the inventory does with sponsorship, it disarms the justifiable resentment, because every resentment I get is justifiable. I don't know about you, because I'm right. And it says here, the usual outcome was that people continue to wrong us and we stayed sore. Oh boy. I had resentment stuck on me like somebody put gorilla glue on them. I had everything from what I call a slow burner to a whopper. And every time I thought that I was getting free of it, it came back with a vengeance. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. Every resentment within a matter of minutes turns to self-pity. And self-pity is characterized by me being a victim. I love people saying, I'm free of being the victim. Well, wait till next time you get a resentment. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And that's my story all the way. Because I tried to fight what was going on, and I tried to get my way, and it didn't work. It backfired. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Get out of the contest. And it's hard to get out of the contest when your motivation is that I'm right and you're wrong. Self-centered fear, again, is driving that. So it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And that's what I was suffering from. I couldn't get free from it. And I tried everything I knew. I tried this many times. And I'm going to tell you, it works. It just doesn't work right now all the time. It's not an instant gratification all the time. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? Yeah, I squandered a lot of hours. In fact, Wilson says in the 12 and 12 that keeping resentment makes us miserably ineffective. Sometimes for a whole day, and sometimes maybe even for longer than that. You know, for me, it was about 6 years on and off. And it burned me out. It sent me into what I call darkness and the black hole. But I will say this, and I'll shut up, that nothing is wasted in God's economy. That there are times that we need ego puncturing. And there is no garbage in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's podium flash. Because God's conversion is always to gold. He takes the worst me and helps it to benefit you. There is no garbage. There's only gold. And I'll pass back to Karen.
All right. I'll move on to the next reading here. Thank you, Al. Both of you guys. We're going to continue on page 66. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Karen?
Hi. I love this line here about, we see that the world and its people really dominated us, especially two sentences. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. And I love that. We do not have to figure out whether they actually did anything wrong or not, fancied or real. If I believe it, you know, and I have a resentment about it, it's real. I used to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what actually happened, because I'm not always clear on reality. You know what I mean? Did they do that? What did that mean? You know, did I cause it? It doesn't matter. The resentment is what matters here, and getting free from the resentment. You know, what actually happened, it just doesn't really matter. So that is really freedom there. I don't have to figure out if it's fancied or real. And if it's a fake event, but I'm still resentful over it, it's real. It's good enough. You know what I mean? I can do the inventory. And it can kill me. It can kill me, you know? And then the other thing is, I have to pray, please help me to look at this to God from an entirely different angle. Because I'm obviously stuck looking at it from my angle, which is going to kill me. And then I love this idea, how can we escape? I want to escape from this terrible resentment that makes me feel terrible. And how could we do this? And we could not wish them away. I think sometimes I fall into, and maybe other people too, we get into this place where we know we're not supposed to be resentful. We know it'll kill us. You know, the spiritual life is better than that, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so we're going along, we're all spiritual, fluffy, duffy, wonderful. And then we get hit with a resentment. And I'm like, I can't have this resentment. I do not have this resentment. I'm trying to wish it away, you know? And no, I'm sorry, you know? That's why we have this process. So that helps me too. I can't just wave my own personal magic wand and poof, it's going to be gone, you know? So anyway, and then what one of the things we do once we're really ready to get rid of this resentment is to realize that perhaps the other people are spiritually sick. And I got to tell you the truth, sometimes that doesn't really do it for me. Even if I realize they're spiritually sick, I might still have the resentment. But I can pray about it. I can ask God to help me show them the same tolerance, self-pity, or at least stop judging them. You know, get a little humility. It's like, whatever they're doing, it's not between me and them. It's between them and God. It's really not about me at all. If they're running amok, that's their problem and God's problem. It is not my problem. My problem is what I'm doing, how I'm running amok spiritually. So, and then I like this, you know, how can I be helpful to him? God, in another prayer, I mean, really pray, pray, pray. Thy will be done. Save me from being angry. And this is another great line. We avoid retaliation or argument. That's just good advice in general. You know what I mean? Because my natural inclination is to argue, you know? I used to get drunk and go in bars and argue with people to have social contact, you know? So that's just not an answer. And we wouldn't treat sick people that way. So, and even if I can't be helpful to them, if I'm engaged in this battle, it's something Al said, he put it really well, which I can't remember it, unfortunately, that I'm ineffective. I'm completely, when I'm engaging in all this stuff, maybe I can't help the person I'm resentful at, but I might be available to help other people if I was free from this resentment and not walking around mad at everybody in the world. So, that's all I have to say. Al?
We began to see that the world and its people really did dominate us. It's pretty powerful there because it's true. They just don't behave. I wish they did, but they don't. Some of them are very irritating. You know, and you can't control the world. It's going to go on. You know? And a lot of truth in that. So we're going to be careful of not being the grouch, which anger makes you moody. Again, Wilson referred to it as silent scorn. I love that one. I'll teach you a lesson. Gosh darn you. And a brainstorm. Think of that. A storm of rage in your head. Oh, my gosh. I certainly have been there. So we realize that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Oh, wow. We're not the only ones bedeviled by sick emotions. That's a great realization to think that I'm not, that we're spirits, all of us fall short of the mark, you know. And that course starts changing our perception. And sometimes it takes a while to get there when you got a real doozy going on or a whopper. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So he reminds us in two sentences that this is important. I've counted the sentences over the years and we'll go over it. It's pretty incredible how he keeps saying, hey, wait, did you not get it in that sentence? I'm going to remind you again. You know. So we're going to see God come up three times here. We ask God. God save me. God will show us. Get the point. Spiritual disease, that's why it's so important. Spiritual solution. Disease by itself is naked. It lends itself to a medical. And we all know the doctor's opinion that there may be, but I think that where this thing operates is in the mind. So a spiritual separate from ease, a separation, what I need to do is I need to get unblocked so I can connect conscious contact, both with you and with God. So we ask God to show us the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Now, have you ever thought about this wording here? Have you ever cheerfully wanted to grant somebody you're really resentful like they were sick? That's not easy. I've heard people say, oh, this isn't that hard. This is very difficult when you're in it. These directions are very difficult. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? Oh, wow. That's, wow. How can I be helpful to the person that I'm hating on my grudge list? God save me from being angry. Your will be done. I've heard in AA, we don't pray for ourselves. All through the steps, we pray for ourselves, all over the place. Why? So we can become useful. AA is not about becoming spiritual. You can't become something you already are. It's born inside of you. What I haven't done as a self-centered person is become useful. The paradox is when I become useful, I become spiritual and I grow along spiritual lines. Funny around here, huh? So we avoid retaliation and argument. Keep your mouth shut. I remember when I wanted to execute my business partner with every word I could think of. My sponsor said, there's only one thing that I want you to do. I want you to shut your mouth, not say one word, and try to kill the poor chap with kindness. I would have never thought about that. That's why sponsorship is very important in this process. So So if we treat sick people that way, we destroy a chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. It's a promise there. It doesn't happen overnight sometimes, but it has happened in my life today. All those people I was very resentful towards, I now can take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. It does come. It just doesn't come on my timetable. I think, okay, I took the inventory, man. I should be free of everything. Well, that's what they said in the last meeting. They did a fifth step and they were free of everything. Sometimes. This is really, really good stuff. And I'll pass with that.
All right. Thank you both. We're going to continue on page 67 for our final paragraph of the evening. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Karen?
This is the heart of it for me. This is where I discover, if I'm really trying to do this and really trying to be open-minded, this is where I discover where I'm at fault, which is something that's really hard for me to do, you know? And I want to tell a story about a different resentment I had to talk about this line, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, which can be very hard to do. And I was writing an inventory one day. I had this resentment at this boss, and I had written many inventories about it, and I still had the resentment and done, you know, fist up everything. And I really hadn't really gotten down to the where I was at fault, I don't think, was part of the problem. But it hadn't worked. I mean, I was still sober, so it was working in that sense, and I was living a good life in between the resentment, you know, but I was writing, I was going through the big book with a friend of mine in the program, and we were just sort of working the steps as we encountered them. So I wrote an inventory because we there, you know, I don't even think I had a burning issue because this person, I had a resentment. I didn't even work for them anymore, but I still had the resentment, you know. And but anyway, so I wrote this other inventory and I prayed, you know, I really do try to pray these. I said, God, please put out of my mind the wrong others have done to me and help me see my own mistakes. And I was just a general prayer like that. I didn't like narrow it to just a particular resentment I was working on, okay? And in this particular case, God took that prayer and applied it to this other person. I wasn't even like inventorying, you know? And 2 days later, it was about something like 2 days later, I'm walking. I remember it. My husband was sitting in a chair and I walked past him. And it was like, all of a sudden, it was like, maybe she never about this boss. Maybe she didn't do anything wrong. And it just came out of my mouth. And I said it to him and it was like, wow. Maybe she didn't do anything wrong. And then I was free to write an inventory about her. And actually, even then, I had to write two inventories. I wrote the first one, which was full of all this great realizations. It really was. I'm telling the truth. It was full of these great realizations. And I called my sponsor and read it to him. And he said, I think you need to write some more. I think you didn't get it all. Talk about it, it was this huge breakthrough and it still wasn't enough. So I wrote another one. Anyway, I did an example with my example. So I'm going to try to share screen again. Let's see if I can do it. Uh-oh, I lost my Zoom window. How do I share? Sorry, guys, it takes me a minute. I don't hardly ever share a screen, so.
Take your time.
Okay. I hope I'm not screaming into my mic. I never know if people can hear me. If I'm screaming, waving me or something. Okay, so So here's how I have, at this point in my sobriety, this is what I do with this. I go back to the list. And in my case, it doesn't say that you have to do this, by the way. You could write your whole table, you know, the three column table, and then do this page, I guess, on all of them. Because it doesn't say you have to do it the way I do it. But this is the way I do it. This is my experience. And this is what works for me. I do this for each resentment. So I go back to the resentment, the paper again, and I look at it, and then I pray for it to put out of my mind the wrong others had done. And I don't think about, you know, my side of the street, his side of the street. I just forget about them entirely. It's just not about them. What, where am I at fault? And I look for my own mistakes. So in the resentment about the lawsuit, whoops, the light bulb just went out over here. Luckily, I have all these computers lighting me. I spent a whole bunch, my mistake, and sometimes I'm not able to write the mistake part until I do the other parts. So I have to go back and write my mistakes. But our power just went out. That's what happened. Anyway, I spent a boatload of time and energy complaining that this situation was happening. I think this was one of the major flaws I had in that particular situation, is that I, oops, my computer just, oh, it's still there. Okay. I can't even read it on here. I couldn't believe it was happening. It was so ridiculous. It was so unjust. And I'm not exaggerating when I say it was unjust. It was like somebody from out in outer space I'd never met came and sued us. I mean, it was really that crazy. And I just couldn't believe it was happening. I don't even know how to explain it. I just spent all this time like, I can't believe this is happening. This shouldn't be happening. It's unfair. On and on and on. I mean, like 2 years of that. I'm not kidding. And I should have just accepted it. This is happening. Yes, I think it's bad, blah, blah, blah. But this is actually happening. And that's the way it is. And then move on from there, you know, and like, okay, now what do I do? So that was the first thing I was at fault. The next thing was that I think I've lost my Zoom window. So I'll just talk you through this part. I was outraged at the world that this could happen to me. I was outraged. How could this happen? And I actually worked for the legal system at that time, which made it like doubly worse. How could this be happening? This is so unfair. You know, and it was like that thunder and lightning and poor me, this is not fair. Which is another lack of acceptance thing. And also me being incredibly judgmental, you know, like, who am I to say how things should work, you know? And then I spent a whole bunch of time judging this guy. He's bad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm right, you know, he's bad. I'm the right person, you know, self-righteous, which are all flaws, okay? I'm the good guy. I don't deserve this, you know, blah, blah, blah. I have better things to do with my time. I need to be helping people get sober. I need to be whatever, you know, self-righteous to the max. And then I let it consume me. I let it consume me. It's not that it made it consume me. There's plenty of people who go through stuff and don't get insane about it. I was obsessed about it and insane. And the other thing I did wrong is I wanted some outside force, not God, some outside human force to come along, my friends, the judge, you know, the court system, whoever, to come along and say, you know what, Karen, you're right and he's wrong. And I don't know why I wanted that so deeply, but that's what I wanted, which of course distorted my views because I was putting all this energy in getting people to say I was right. And what I should have done instead, and a lot of times when I'm writing this inventory, it becomes clear to me, what I should have done instead was go to God and say, okay, God, what do you think about this? What's your thoughts about this? How should, you know, how do you see this? How should I see this? What do you want me to do? And then just do it. Practice the 11th step, you know. What do you want me to do today, God? Give me the power to do it. Go out and do it, you know, which might have been taking actions I had to take about this crazy lawsuit, but it certainly didn't include me being insane about it. So then the other question, where was I selfish? Well, I was selfish. I mean, all I thought about was me and how this affected me and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's so unfair. And honestly, I didn't even hardly think that much about other people that were impacted by this nuttiness, including my husband, who was just as impacted, you know what I mean? I was dishonest. Sometimes I was pretending to be more spiritual and serene than I actually was, because I knew you're not supposed to have resentments, right? So that was dishonest. I was self-seeking. I wanted to win. I want to look good, right? I was self-seeking. Oh, I just said that. I want to win. And I also didn't want to spend the time and money and energy on this. It was basically self-determined, self-will. This is not what I want to be doing right now, God, you know? Now, if I had stopped and put it that way, that might have helped me a little, because maybe there was a reason this was happening in my life. Maybe that guy needed to do whatever he was doing, you know what I mean? It had to happen to someone. Why not me? I was probably better able, equipped to have this thing happen to me than a lot of other people, you know? So maybe that way I could take the heat better than someone else. So, and I was frightened, very frightened. I was afraid we couldn't pay our lawyer because it cost a boatload. I was afraid that even if we could pay it, we needed it for something else. And where was I to blame? So basically I read this paragraph and I answer each question. Where was I to blame? I was to blame because I couldn't escape the situation that was happening. You know, I had to respond to this lawsuit constantly for 2 years or three, however long it lasted. It might've been 3 years, but I didn't have to be crazy about it. You know, I didn't have to spend so much time in resentment and anger. And I could have accepted it as it was. Now, a lot of this is kind of pie in the sky, but, and I just want to, you know, we're not going to get to step 5, 6, and 7 here, but I want to talk about what actually happened with this. This was a really, really huge resentment. And when we finally, we did win, I mean, it was a really ridiculous situation. We did win, but it cost us literally tens of thousands of dollars. We did win, and then the other guy was supposed to pay us money, and his lawyer was supposed to pay us money, which never, ever happens. And at some point after all this, the guy wasn't going to pony up the money. I don't think he had it. I was so soul sick. I was so desperate. I went to God, and I said, "What should I do, God?" And what I got was, "Forgive him. Forgive him." You know, that's why I like it that we say the Lord's Prayer in meetings, because it reminds me, forgive him as I want to be forgiven. You know, and I have been forgiven for many, many things, right? Why should all of a sudden I expect the world, everybody else to be perfect, and I can't forgive people, even if it's something big? And in my case, it turned out forgiving him the debt, the money, which is like true teeth, you know, in this case. I mean, different cases would be different. Turned out the guy was dying. He didn't have any money. It was a whole crazy thing. And we ended up being friends. It came to me that what I needed to do was to forgive him and offer him what forgiveness felt like, because that might help him in his eternal spiritual journey, for him to experience that. Which actually he didn't experience it that way. He thought he hadn't done anything wrong, but that's between him and God, you know? But I truly forgave him, and I have like zero resentments about it. I have much more trivial things that have happened to me in recovery and before that I still have resentments every once in a while if it pops into my head. Whereas this thing, man, it's just over. And he ended up giving me these yellow irises, flowers from, that he had weed, you know, cut out of his garden, you know, dug up. And I meant to plant them because I really had forgiven. I didn't have any resentment about it. I was going to plant them, and I didn't get around to it because that's like me. I have too many projects. And they planted themselves. So every year, you know, God wanted me to see these flowers every year. Every year I see these beautiful yellow irises, and I remember that really it's about forgiveness and love and cutting people slack, even crazy bad people, you know, quote unquote bad people. So now I'm going to pass it over to Al.
All right, thank you. So we're coming out of, really out of this, we're coming out of the third step decision, which is for me the conditions of surrender. And we're looking at a process here of steps 4 through 9, not just step 4. It takes that whole process to be able for me to get to forgiveness or to get unblocked from self. It's not just seen in one step there. It's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. they're so important that Bill stuck it in step 10. He stuck it in step 11, and we get to give it away to another alcoholic in step 12. So we never get beyond the process of 4 through 9. So we'll do some counting here. This is one of my favorite paragraphs too, referring to the list again, putting out of the minds the wrongs others have done. Okay. All right. Try that one next time you have a Whopper. This is some good stuff. It goes contrary to our natures. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. Well, so often you hear in our big, wonderful, beautiful fellowship, my part. In our inventory, my part's never brought up, because if I have a part, it means you have a part. And so it eliminates that idea. And it's important for me in the inventory to see that that idea is eliminated, and for good reasons. Where had we been selfish? So selfish is something you want from me that I'm not willing to give to you. Maybe you want me to be more giving. Maybe you want me to be on time. Maybe you want me to be more loving. Maybe you want me to be a better listener. Maybe you want me to communicate better, etc. Either I'm not able to give it to you, or I'm not willing to give it to you because I'm selfish. So I write that out, that I'm selfish. I don't write it in each person, institution, or principle. I just write out, why am I a selfish person? What am I a failure to give there? Dishonest. Certainly I write out some of that. Most of the time when you have a resentment, you need people that agree with you. Yeah, that is a rotten bastard. And you really work that one up. And it's dishonest because you're killing their character, and it's coming out of resentment. It's fueled. That's not the only way, to be dishonest in a resentment, but that's one way. Self-seeking and frightened, I see that as the driver. The self-seeking and frightened is something that I want from you that you're not willing to give, that I'm trying to manipulate you or control you into giving me. I want you to be different. I want my partners to listen to me. I want my business partners to make sure I'm important. I want them to be able to make more money because my ideas are right. I want my wife to be sober. And so I'll go to any length to be the actor to manipulate and control those situations to get what I want. That's self-seeking and frightened for me. The driver is self-centered fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I want, or I'm going to lose something that I have. It's the driver. It's all over this. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we try to disregard the other person entirely. There's number two. He said it 2 times now. This is how important it is, and this is how difficult this is. Where were we to blame? Number three. Just brought it up in a different way. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. Number four. We saw our faults and listed them. Number five. This stuff isn't easy when you got a Whopper. So in 5 times, he's going to tell us the same thing in a different way. You're going to have to own up to it, Al. You know, you're going to have to take a look at where you were selfish, where you were dishonest, and where you were self-seeking and frightened. You know, one thing about the big book, some people say that there's 4 columns. Some people say there's 5 columns. Some people say that this here isn't a column. This is the start of your 8-step inventory, that there's only 3 columns. I say what's important is you do it. Don't get hooked up in what, where, when, or any of those things. Just do it. And in doing it, even if you do it imperfectly, like most of us have done it, you get results. The most important thing when you go into the steps is attitude, not technique or knowledge. Hey, I'm willing to do this because my life has crashed and burned. That's what gets you through the steps. Later on, you've got the rest of your life to get, like I said, now you got 5 or this or hurt, interfered. I didn't get all that the first time I did. That took me years in the steps. with other people and listening to other people and my own experience to be able to communicate this in this way. I tell you, in the first 5 or 10 years, I was not communicating this inventory this way. So the most important thing is that you do it. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly. There it is again. Okay, there it is. If you've forgotten so far, he's going to say it again. Number 6, we admitted our wrongs honestly. And we're willing to set these matters straight. For me, that's 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Okay, I'm going to need a lot of God help in this, and I'm going to need your help in this. I can't get to forgiveness by myself. Ain't going to happen. The best I can do is stay resentful until I put myself in this process and I allow you and God to help me and understand that AA is not a self-help program. It is not a self-help program. It is a God help and help others and let others help me program. And once I got that down, that this is not a self-help program, this is a God help, help others, and you allowing you to help me, I can get to the other side of these resentments. It took me 4 years to forgive my wife for drinking at 21 years of sobriety. Probably the same thing with my partners. But I tell you what, today in those relationships, I don't have the angst anymore. I don't have the resentments. I don't have... And it all happened in Alcoholics Anonymous, not because I had the intellect and, oh my God, that's where I need to get. It happened in a spiritual sense. These steps work. They all don't always work the right now. The thing that happens right now within the steps is a release from the obsession to drink alcohol and be restored to sanity. So the insanity of the first drink doesn't get me drunk. That can happen very quickly. The rest for me has been more of a slow process, and what my sponsor calls Alcoholics Anonymous is slobriety. I think there's a lot of truth in that, that this sometimes is a very painfully slow process to get to that place again and again that we call surrender, again and again and again and again. And I will pass.
Well, that was amazing. Everybody's going to get a chance to unmute after we do a little bit of business here. Thank you both so much. Let's see. I'm sharing the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. All righty, I've got links in the chat as well. If you didn't catch those scan codes, and also another reminder for the email signup list. Our common welfare, or word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will open the floor for any announcements for the good of AA. Anybody? Hearing none, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions and would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Nobody's going to run right out of here. Please feel free to talk to any one of us. Or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to thank our panel one more time and thank all of you for participating, taking time out of your day to show up. We'll, after the Lord's Prayer, we'll be able to thank everyone. But I'm wondering if Leanne would read the last three paragraphs on page 164.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
From page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you so much. I would invite everyone, as you see fit, to unmute, and we can have a distracting, confusing cacophony. We love that word, cacophony, of the Lord's Prayer. Moment of silence. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be
thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day
our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation.
But deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Al.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for a great meeting, y'all. I'll check you out again.
Thank you, Bobby. Come see us again.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to make it again. I like this meeting. Very good.
Thank you. We do too,
okay, guys. And thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great speakers too.
That was awesome. No side of the